I am her brokering, and Lois and our four children and I have come up here very often to Holden. Holden has shaped us, and we have shaped Holden. We have invested a great deal in this village, and the village has invested extremely much in us, and that means not only the nature, but human nature, the people whom we have met. Some of you we have met when you were very little, when you were younger, and you come up to me and you say things like, I remember you when I was in junior high school, but you're not kidding me. You're older than that, but you probably felt like you were in junior high school when you saw us. Much of my life, 10 years of my life, was, my main education was a country school. I mustn't overlook that. A country school in Nebraska is where I learned that everything is important. I remember the teacher's name, and I remember her primarily because I fell in love with her. I thought that's what you did with a teacher. And I've always loved teachers. I didn't know you could have a bad one. So I have always loved my teachers, and I loved her very much. In fact, when I heard that she was, they were going to have a shower for her before her wedding, and she didn't know, I felt badly, so I told her. Have you ever had a whole countryside and the congregation and your father, who is the parish pastor, be angry at you when you're 9 years old? I can still remember the feeling. I also learned in that school that every sense counts. I mean, all emotions and all parts of the body are important. It was very important for me, for instance, to have Eugene Knippelmeyer on my team because he batted left-handed and he was very quick. That was part of our curriculum, I don't recall. So was discipline. I didn't do too well in that. I don't know why. I think I was deviating. Today they call that brainstorming and imagination. I liked art. That wasn't his name, that's what he drew. We didn't have an art, but we had a Melvin. Now, if any of you is Melvin, you're not the Melvin I know. The Melvin I know was a marvelous human being who stayed with us all the while I went through country school. They wouldn't let him leave. He just stayed in the third grade. But we didn't know that there was anything the matter with that. What we liked about Melvin was that he was strong. Now, in those days, Gangbusters were big. That was our biggest television show. In Nebraska, in 1935 and 6 and 7. I mean, I thought it was television because it was very vivid to me. I could see. I mean, it was more vivid than my television set is in Bloomington. I went on. That was on Saturday night. Sunday morning, I can remember. My Sunday mornings were also always cautious, not because my father was preparing his sermon. That was also true. I can remember how quiet we were, but I carefully ascended the stairs into the hayloft because I was sure that someone who was at large from Gangbusters was hiding in my barn. I had my hay fork just at the right side and never needed it all through those years. But all the pictures I saw, and Melvin was the kind of person who could protect us on Monday morning in case the person who usually escaped from Oklahoma was still in Nebraska somewhere. So, I don't know what's new about television. It looks kind of old to me. Country school was where I got a lot of my education. I don't remember what our teacher did. I guess she was just there. She opened the door and she closed it and she made sure that we were all present. We all felt important. Melvin was very important. He taught us how to draw. He taught us how to see things. He could look at a pig and then he could draw it so it looked like a pig. And so we admired Melvin for that. And we took turns sort of sitting those benches. You sit next to them and where they were. Well, when I would come home, my mother would say, "You've had art class today," and I'd say yes, because you could smell Melvin. He rubbed off. That is, You wouldn't know, but I did smell some of these things before you came in tonight, because Melvin taught me that aroma is very important. It's important in the kitchen. It's important between lovers, and it's very important to know that aroma. In fact, when I write songs, I usually do a body check to make sure that I don't leave off some important part of the body. You would be surprised how people write hymns. They don't always sit in the front pew when they write hymns. They really get into the human being and take a look at it. By the way, I just said two magic words, and if I was on an old radio or television show, a magic, what was it, a duck or something came down? Because I have a deck of words, in case I run out, you know, probably I have a whole stack of words. I put out two words, one is into and then one is to look. And I just use those two words in a row, and I'm very proud. That's like sticking to your notes. I've got my notes on my left, this is my left brain over here. This is my right brain over here, and I am sitting in the middle of my brain. My brain. This is all my brain around me, and my inside is out, and I'm trying to get my outside back in so I can get from in to out and help you look at it with me. That's how we travel. You just, you know, you look at it and it's very little. You get it in your eyes and you blink, and all of a sudden it fills your mind, your imagination. You store it as a tiny molecule, and then someone says the big word. All of a sudden you make a two-hour speech on this tiny molecule that's been stored in there, and you can blow it up and preach and teach and talk. That's how it is. It's in and out all the time. That's what that's another way of looking at Revelation too. It comes in and the message is concealed, and then it's revealed, and it's concealed and revealed. It's hid and unhid. It's stuck and unstuck. It's told and untold and told. So that's why we don't get bored, not even when we get older. In fact, you get less bored sometimes when you get older, because you move it more. You move it more. And you move it more in many directions. I know when I write texts too. I forgot to announce that in this microphone, so people would like to know that. I write texts a lot, all kinds of texts, including text lyrics for composers. I have probably been composed by more than 50 composers. I'll name drop, Dave Brubeck, okay? I did a cantata with Dave Brubeck, and it's rather awesome to sit with a jazz man whom you hardly know, and you're going to write a cantata that he would like. So I wrote one that he didn't like. I didn't show it to him. I didn't like it myself. So I quickly rewrote it in the Milwaukee airport in about 10 minutes, and he liked it very much. But I first had to get a picture of what jazz was, so we were sitting in the room kind of looking at each other. And like you, I'm very visual. I mean, I'm very imaginative, just as you are. And sometimes I practice my imagination. So I said to Dave, could you pick out a wall and tell me what jazz looks like? And he picked out a wall in this room. And if you take a wall and you press it against a chalkboard, you'll have a graph, right? Just take a look at any wall, look at the ceiling. If you took that ceiling and pressed everything flat and drew it like a flat picture on a flat surface, you'd have a graph. I mean, I know a systematics professor who could take that and make the whole systematics about God and human beings just out of that kind of a thing. It would come out of the center and just move on around. I like the graph up there. Never seen it that way before. So I drew what he said jazz was. I labeled, and I went to an airport, and I wrote the cantata. We always write off what we see, what it looks like. I saw a man who had a great big desk between him and all who came to him. And it was an enormous desk. It wasn't only the size of a normal desk, he used it so it was bigger. He used the desk in such a large way that I'm sure that whenever he snowballed, when he was a boy, he threw them and then ducked inside the screen porch. You couldn't get near him. You know what I mean? And so I wrote about him, but I didn't want to be sued. You hate to be sued. So, especially when it's a colleague who sits at the next desk, you know. So I put a skirt on him. And now, so I wrote the story. It's in the book Eye Opener, and I should say also I've written 32 books. Some of them are here, and some of them are under my bed. When a book dies, that is, when a publisher no longer wants to print my book, I get very sad. And then I go and buy up all my little children, and our beds are held up by old books. They are such beautiful books, though. I mean, that whole 9 series with Sister Noemi, where, you know, In the Rustling Grass, in due season, people write me and ask me if I have any. And I do. I have hundreds, but I say, not yet. And I'm waiting for the price to go up. That's my... I'm looking for my friend here who has this huge desk. And if I don't find it, I can tell you the story. Once there was a girl who... Her mother made her hoop skirts when she was little, and she pressed them, and the girl was very good at not wrinkling them. And when she grew up, she wanted to be a nurse, but she cannot because she can't get close enough to the patients. You're not supposed to laugh, you're supposed to cry. We're into language tonight, important words like horse and I thirst and forgive and wind. Marvelous words. Rabbit, maybe. But I want to read something that I really like. I wrote it. My mother used to make pie, and she liked her pie, so I learned that you could like what you do. I know some people who never like what they do, but I like this, so I will read it to you. I like the juxtaposition of, by the way, this book isn't doing well at all. So I have sold it to the bookstore very cheap, and if you're getting it for full price, they're making a big deal. So don't pay too much for it, and or you can order them from me, from my garage. I have thousands of copies. I think it's a book for the future. On this side, Roland Bainton writes about Luther as a translator in the Wartburg Castle. Over here, we juxtapose a picture of a woman, and she has banners on her and little charts and calendars on her wall, and there she probably picked them out, and she probably likes them. I'll read one. I'll translate it from German. Show me, Lord, your way. She likes that. And by the way, that reminds me of Wes Preeb, you know. Wes Preeb has a very, very, very key word. He will always use it in vespers, matins, midnight services, anywhere. It is the word journey or the walk. Wes always takes you on a way when Wes prays with you. He's always going with you somewhere. That's what he does. And I told him today that I was really proud because he reminded me of God. He was consistent. He seemed to understand that also. I mean, God and Wes and I understood that. There's something about being consistent, that is, there's something about knowing who you are. There's something about knowing your big word. There's something about knowing that in all of your language and all of your verbs and all of your pronouns that there's one word that kind of is in the center of your whole vocabulary. And it's probably been there a long time, and you're going to stay with it. It may have begun as a negative word. It may have begun with the word fear and death, but the big word for you is life and resurrection. It may be the other side of a word you never liked. It may be the outside of a word that has an inside. It may be the other side of the other side of your word. Because a word at least has two sides. I like what I wrote, so I'll read it before I close this book. Language is a living work. I think we have to work at it and play at having a language. The Spirit hovers over our true stories to shape scriptures with us, the people. See, when Luther was in this castle, sometimes it took him days to translate, you know, an idea. In fact, later on when he translated the Old Testament, he would walk among the people and see what the word meant to them, and then he would put it in their idiom. He wanted them to understand that his translation was to be the word of the people. It doesn't make any sense to use words if they don't have any meaning. So Luther meant for words to have meaning. The Spirit hovers over all true stories to shape the scriptures with the people. And at Holden, one of the things we do is we find meaning together. And sometimes we come here and we find that someone else rubs off on us, or someone else brings something out of us that no one else ever did. And we find more meaning. The word is original in every tongue. And I don't mean every language like Norwegian and German, but I mean every tongue. Every tongue is original. And every people, in every age, in every kind, translate into their own mother tongue and look for accents, dialects, mental pictures, and paraphrases. The life of Christ is alive and well. Life is a kernel in every tough text. So when I go after a text, or when I let a text go after me, I look for its inside. Now we know there are some lasting words, some very lasting words. And Jesus said one called, "Remember Me." That's a good cue, is it not? So we haven't rehearsed, but I'm just saying to Mari that that's a good cue. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Wouldn't that have been nice if Jesus sang from the cross? That would be such a surprise, wouldn't it? Some Lenten service, you pastors just stand against the cross and then start singing and surprise them. You can sing, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom, when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me.
Jesus, remember me
when you come into your kingdom,
when you come into your kingdom."
Let's do that again so we feel comfortable with it.
Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom.
Could you play it too softly again? I'm looking for something to lay this behind this, something that looks nice. This is from Poland. One of the things I do is take people into the East Bloc, and when I leave you, I'll go to Canada for 2 days and then back into the East Bloc and take 95 people close to the roots of the church, home for handicapped, congregations, seminaries. And when we were there just a few weeks ago, I bought this in Poland, and it's called IHS. You can find that in Poland too. So I'm going to use that as my hymnal cover. I don't want you to look at this. This is the Rapid Printing Company in Bloomington, Minnesota, Pittsburgh. This is much more exciting as a book cover from Poland. I mean, you've got a lot of stuff lying around your house you could use too. To make it look just a little different once in a while. Just a little different. Find a stump and a rabbit. Okay, "Father, I thirst, and my cup is very empty."
Father, I thirst, and my cup is very empty.
forgive them all, for they know not what they're doing.
Father, forgive them all,
for they know not,
for they know not what they're doing.
My God, my God, my God, why have you forsaken me?
My God,
my God, my God,
why have you forsaken me? My God, my God,
why have you now forsaken me?
Why have you now forsaken me?
Let's play it through soft again. I was just trying to edit it a little. You know what I mean? I hate to take your time to do this, but I may not find time afterwards. The next one is, Woman, Behold Your Son, Son, Behold Extended Family.
Woman, behold your son.
Son, behold.
Son, behold extended family.
Woman, behold your son.
Woman, behold your son.
Son, behold.
Son, behold extended family.
Now, this one's called Finished. All my work is finished. All the work and word is ended.
Finished, my word is finished. All the work
finished, my work is done.
Finished, my work is done.
All the word and work is ended.
All the word and work is ended.
That's better. Finished, all my work is, all work is finished, my word is ended. That's it. I'm doing this in the front of you so you can go home and do it better. Sometimes creative people intimidate someone else. I'm doing this, so I think that we should get it right, don't you? Well, let's get it right. Herb, finished, my work is ended. All thy work and word is ended.
Finished, my work is ended. All thy work and word is ended.
Finished, my work is done.
Finished, my work is done.
All thy word and work,
all thy word and work is done.
I think this one, Father, into your hands I now commit my spirit.
Father, into your hands I now commit my spirit.
Better. Father, into your hands I do now. I thought of will now, but I don't think it's will now. I do now commit my spirit.
Father,
into your hands.
Into your hands.
I do now commit.
I do now commit my spirit.
Father,
into your hands. I do now.
Let's through softly three times. Just think of those words. We sang them and makes it a little more complex, but what's one of the words that he said? If you could just take one word out of the whole sentence, what is it? Pardon? Forgive. What a lasting word. Just imagine the enormous power of the word forgive. It's a whole universe. There's anyone who doesn't want it, and anyone who doesn't need it, and anyone to whom it can't be given, forgive. was another key basic word that Jesus said. He had seven words to say, and he said another one. What is it? Get it down to one word. Thirst. Just think of thirst. I mean the kind of thirst when you've been hiking, or the kind of thirst when there is no milk and there is no water. And then all that goes with thirst. Hunger that usually goes with, and flies. You've seen them on television. Flies go with thirst, and swollen eyes. It all goes with thirst. What an enormous word Jesus chose. I mean, he could have said Holden Village. He could have said the United States of America, and he said thirst. I mean, he had all of Webster, and he said thirst. He had seven words to say, and what was the third word he said? Find one. Finished. Oh, what a word. Finished. Not done with. Not just over with, but finished. I mean, the job all finished. What a word. One could get into this word, finished. Could one not? And one could have a look at the word finished. What a word. You should go and see someone finishing something, and then the look on them, not only on them, their face, but the look on them when they're finished. Yeah, it's nice. Well, I'd like to tell you seven other words that you know about a little. And if you can play softly, Mari, on the that limerick tune, what can I? Yeah, I'll hum it for you. Fine, I'd like to. Would you like to hum it for her?
Oh, no.
No. Well, then why should I? Why should I like it any better? You probably don't know the tune, do you? I know. And it's my session anyway. I know. I would like if someone lit that candle and lit this candle here. And when you light the candle, realize that these candles come from Wittenberg. And they will never be seen in the East Block. So we brought their candles so we could see their light over here. That's exciting to them. They really are excited that we're seeing their light in our land. We have also taken many birdhouses to the German Democratic Republic so that atheist birds can live in Lutheran birdhouses. And we never put a hole in the birdhouse because we don't know how big an atheist bird is. So we let them put their own hole in the birdhouse. And this really intrigues them when they think about their birds living in our houses. But we also give them to the church so that their birds are living in our homes. They are fascinating by that. They can't come. But the birds don't. The birds rather ignore the wall. The birds get into a flight pattern, and they seem not to know about politics. So while, you know, to cover my going over to the piano, so that we don't have this silence, would someone light these two candles loudly? That was let's do it together. La 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 la. La 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 There once was a boy in the box. They covered the box up with rocks. They cemented the floor and leaned on the door. He busted the box and the locks, the locks, the locks, the locks. He busted the box and the locks. I wrote some limericks, and I thought we should sing limericks tonight. Just seven limericks, and I will tell you seven limerick stories. It's not a difficult tune. Don't leave yet. Okay? I mean, this song was written at Holden Village. I saw a man who walked like a limerick, and I said, that man can write a limerick. He didn't walk like a corral. You know, a corral is kind of klutzy, but a limerick. I saw him go across Holden Village. I said, that guy can write a limerick. No, I knew he was a composer, but, and he did. I won't mention his name. He's very famous. I was never allowed dancing lessons, not even at Wartburg. Okay, here we go. We'll get there. All right, I want to tell you a story about a man who in this village, a night for Vespers, spent the whole day building a cage out of metal. Now, I brought this metal to remind me of this story. See? I mean, these are my notes. These are my notes. You don't think I just have this out here? I mean, I have to clean this up later. And he was an artist, too, so I brought a horseshoe that was broken. You don't very often find a broken horseshoe. It's kind of an artifact. So I brought it. It's to remind me of this man who built the cage, had his friends bring it down to the village center, put it on the stage, got into the cage, welded himself into it, and Vespers began. We all came in, there he sat in his cage. You know the box. You know, what he wanted more than anything was to break out. What he wanted more than anything was to get out of this iron cage. And he lived in this village for a long time because he wanted an Easter. And in the middle of the Vespers, he took his torch and he began to cut the bars. Can you imagine doing that down in the village center? We didn't have acolytes. You know what we had? Buckets of water people. We had people lined up throwing water wherever sparks were. And we had a huge screen up so that we who sat watching this fireworks would not be blinded. And he danced. He danced out in his clothes had some burns on them. And he was smoking when he came out of his cage. And then he welded it shut. And he was on the outside. It stood out here for years. You didn't know that, did you? Oh, I mean, this is a place where people will do strange things. To simply say, I'd like to get out of my box. I would like to get out of this iron cage. And there are many artistic and non-artistic ways of saying and doing that. And so we'll sing the first stanza to remember this young man. We'll sing it very slowly. It says, there once was a man of young age. Let's read it together. There once there was a man of young age whose spirit was locked in the cage. A wind and a fire cut open the ire. He danced through the door. You know what ire is? Ire is anger, right? Well, that's what he had. He didn't like it. And he really wanted, in the front of the whole village, to say, I'd like to get out of this rage, Jing Cage. Wish I had said that. That sounded pretty good. I didn't even get it down here. Out of this raging cage. Let's sing it. There once was a man of young age whose spirit was locked in a cage. A wind and a fire cut open the ire. He danced through the door of his rage, his rage, his rage, his rage. He danced through the door of his rage. Now I'll tell you a second story. The candle. This candle, like this candle, was way up on Buckskin Mountain. 8 o'clock at night, we had Vespers down here. And not he, but I thought it was time for a girl. He climbed the mountain, and he lit his candle there when we lit our candle down here. It was a sloping altar, because we all decided that that night the altar would reach all the way from Holden to the top of Buckskin Mountain. And you know, the candles didn't even slide off that sloping altar. Can you see it? Can you see an altar that's all the way to the top of Buckskin Mountain? And there's a candle up there and a candle down here. That's a long sloping altar. And I kind of wrote about that yesterday, and here we will sing it. A girl climbed up, she drew a straight line to the right. Her eye felt the slope of that very long rope of an altar that ends out of sight, of sight, of sight, of sight, of an altar that ends out of sight. Now, I tell you a third story. Third story is about a woman I talked about the other day, her big word. This man on the hill, his big word, what do you think it was? Community. He didn't want to be, he liked climbing, but he wanted to be with us. But he went far to be near. The first man's word was something like freedom. I know a man whose favorite word is horse. He sends me horse poems all the time, and I may read one tonight. His word, he loves horse. He's into hoarseness. Some people are into community. He's into horse. And you would be surprised when he describes horse, what he means by horse. I'll read his poem just in case I forget later. There is no place for a good old horse to go. Watch this line. Service is rooted in his soul. That's all he ever writes about, is this service is rooted in his soul. Winter's burden and summer's heat test him. He's at the mercy of the Lord's goodness or neglect. But he knows that the master neglects or is good to the horse. So now he is talking about himself as the master. He drops his head into the bridle again to work away his days. And then who remembers days when he was grand? Love, Gene. Gene writes me all these horse poems. I've got many, many horse letters from him. I would like to tell you about Emma. Her big word was Jesus. I told some of you about Emma. She said, when I goes to Detroit, Michigan, Jesus gets on the bus and he sits beside me. So I went to see the bus going to Detroit and I never saw Jesus get on. But I told some of you, Emma didn't either. And then she said, give me Jesus. She would say that every once in a while, like a little refrain, like Selah in the Old Testament. Give me Jesus. She liked that. And then she would say very often, she'd tell the old story, when I was a little girl and I was sick, my aunt, she'd come down through the cornfield in Mississippi and she made me corn mush, and she gave me corn mush and I got well. So you see, Jesus is my doctor. I mean, she let Jesus use corn mush. So let's sing about Emma. This was her big word, Jesus. There once was a girl so ill, her auntie cooked mush to her fill. And now she will tell how the Lord made her well, for the corn and the mush were God's will, God's will, God's will, God's will, for the corn and the mush were God's will. Let me hear you say, yah.
Yah.
One voice.
Yah.
That would be enough for a whole baptism. That could be all you'd need. Just listen to God's once more.
Yeah.
And then when the hush is over, go and tell the children who were baptized that God said what?
Yeah.
That you could have a quick service. Let's sing the next stanza. I heard that happened in Norway, no doubt. But I did hear it happen in Norway, that the pastor said to the congregation, sit down, said to the organist, don't play, shut the organ, said to the elders of the church, don't come forward, told the parents, be seated, went out and got the child, held the child over the water, and said in one great Norwegian voice, so God would understand, what did this man say?
Yeah.
All he said. Organists began to play, the people came forward, the choir began to sing, the elders came, and everybody has been telling this child that God said what?
Yeah.
That's a powerful word when someone tells you that you are a to them and not a no to them. That, what a wonderful word. Let's sing about Yah. There once was a shout of the word Yah, who seems to be very absurd. Yah covers the earth, awakens rebirth through all of the Yahs that are heard, are heard, are heard, are heard, through all the Yahs that are heard. Play too softly. Yeah, this plant, I like. You see this plant? I brought this plant because in the seminary, it's live. In the seminary, I've been teaching for 19 years, and some of you know that the professors don't even know I'm there, because I teach at night, and I teach in ways that people don't know they're learning. Later on, they find out they're learning, years later, and I only give A's. Once in 19 years, one student tried to get a B. We talked him out of it. It took us a long time. We got him up until finally he accepted an A. Very difficult for him. He was a little proud. But one assignment that I often make is that they each have a pet, a class pet. It could be a professor they don't like, something they want to tame, something they would like to understand. And a tree maybe right outside their house, and they've not seen it for ever, you know, because they've been very busy in their lexicons, and they've not seen this tree. And one student brought an avocado seed. Now, it didn't embarrass me, didn't seem to embarrass her, but she raised this avocado seed all through the term. And then she would take it for walks as it grew, and, you know, she'd walk around the campus. I won't mention the campus, but it's one of her very large ones. And they would say, what are you doing? She said, I'm taking Ava for a walk. She had named it. And she was taking Ava for a walk. And they said, whose class is this? And she said, brokering's. And they said, that figures. And she would talk to Ava. But she said at the end of the term, it was the only thing she'd ever kept alive. She doesn't ever remember that she ever kept anything alive, and I don't know how you could go into ministry without ever knowing the joy of keeping something alive. So I think we should read this next one to her in her honor. There once was a girl in great need of finding her life in the seed. Avocados did grow, and so did she know that the love of the Lord is a deed, a deed, a deed, a deed, that the love of the Lord is a deed. That marvelous? We're right in the same pitch. Okay, I will read this next one with you, and because I brought my cup. And read with me. There once was a fountain that burst, where Jesus will cry out, I thirst. All watch in the sky, the fountains are dry. The children in cups and the thirst. The children in cups. Do that again and we'll sing it. We'll sing an a cappella and see how we do. See if we can take this back home. There once was a fountain that burst, where Jesus will cry out, I thirst. All watch in the sky if the fountains are dry, with children and cups in their thirst, their thirst, their thirst, their thirst, with children and cups in their thirst. Now, I sometimes hand out paper bags so that seminary students can bring a word in their bag. They like to type so much, so I give them a paper bag. It can be a bigger word, heavier, and have a lot of dimensions. So, one person brought his word, and it was a bag of sand. And he took the bag, poured the sand, and blew into it, and he said, that is my word. My word is wind and sand, but that's just the outside of my word. The real picture of my word is that there's sand and there's wind in the world, and if you walk against the wind, you eat the sand, but if you walk with the wind, you will never eat the sand. How can you flunk someone like that? even when they've got sand all over the floor. And the next teachers will never understand what that sand is doing on the floor in the seminary room. Alright, let's read it. There once was a wind in the sand that blew through the cities and land. With the wind at the rear, we have little to fear, so we hold to the wind by the hand. The hand, the hand, we hold to the wind by the hand. Let's do the next one. This next one is in honor of this rabbit, or in memory of this rabbit. Oh, this place is so full of images and memories. When the sauna down there was being built years ago, there were leftover pieces of logs. And you know, leftovers made the Bible, didn't they, when Jesus broke the bread? And leftovers always make a society, whether they're people or whether it's little logs. So we looked at the leftovers and we had pity. And we went out there and people began to saw things. I think this is the only remnant of that festival of left. And maybe that down at Narnia there's one. But we had the wise men, and we may have had wise women, and we had Mary and Joseph, and I remember a wise man who had a great big, for his belly button, and a big rock, and it was marvelous. We brought all of these pieces of leftovers, and we had a parade in the village. And then we wanted a piano, so we had an auction, and we sold these wise men with belly buttons for high prices, and people got carried away and even bought The Night Before Jesus, which I wrote here at Holden, and some dentist paid $700 for my original script. He gave it to Holden, not to me, which he should have. You know, this is the excitement of this village. Don't overlook leftovers. Let's say something about leftovers. There once was a mountain of trees. Let's read it together. There once was a mountain of trees that weathered the summers and freeze. They formed a warm space for a sauna of grace. The leftovers kneel on their knees, their knees, their knees, their knees. The leftovers kneel on their knees. Say with me the next one. There once was a village of war, with copper and tins galore. People climb to this place in the periods of grace. There's more wealth than ever before, 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 than ever before. Now I think I have five more minutes, and we have five more minutes. I would just like to tell you about one quick term paper and then ask you the same question. The largest term paper I've ever received was on a piece of paper that was probably 30 inches by 24. That is a large term paper, I would say. It was so large, he couldn't get it into the typewriter. This bothered him a little because he was neat. So he wrote it by hand, the whole term paper by hand. But that didn't with crayons. That didn't satisfy him either. He memorized it. He memorized the whole term paper. He was so proud of it, he punched a hole through it so that he could watch us while he recited his whole term paper. And there he stood. I can still see him. He may be your pastor now. With his huge term paper in the front of him, and he had it all memorized, and he wasn't looking at it at all. He was looking at us, and he recited his whole term paper, and this is how it went. So that was it. It was so wonderful. We applauded, gave him an A+, and I saw him years later. And he came up to me, and he looked at me, and guess what he said?
So.
That's right. Exactly what he said.
And then he showed the picture of his marvelous daughter. It was just amazing. I just wanted to know so much about her. And he asked me Luther's old question, which is right in the middle of the catechism throughout. And what is the word?
So.
Well, Luther goes a little longer. He says, so what does this mean? But that's that was the whole question. And then he took his shoes off. He tied them together and put them around my neck, which is a strange thing for someone to do. And he left the room. And he waved, and guess what he said from a distance?
So.
So? I've never seen him again. But if you have a... But I'm sure that if I ever see him again, he'll have this deep term paper on his mind. He never forgot his big word. His big word is, so was heißt das? What does this mean? And I ask myself about that, about everything that, most everything that I do and feel. And what did this night mean to you? So what is your big word? So how do you like the word horse? Why did the man choose the word horse? I can tell you, he made a huge box. In the middle of the box was the inside of the horse. The outside of the horse was decorated like a cake. It was a three-year-old boy's cake, because ever since he was three, he thought he would get a horse. I remember when I was four, I thought I'd get a razor. But I never got a razor, and he never got a horse. He was 27, and he was in seminary. He still never had a horse. And inside his horse, he had a very tiny scroll, and if you pull the tail of the horse out, you could find on this tiny scroll the inside of his word horse. And the inside of his word horse had written in very, very, very tiny, tight words, I do not know why a horse would let anyone ride it. I would not. I mean, he comes all the way to the seminary to write that. Inside a yellow box, inside a horse, on the end of a long piece of string, and he's out there in the seminary, out there preaching somewhere. And I saw him 7 years or eight later, and he said, I still don't have a horse. And not long ago, he wrote, a car came right up alongside me in the parking lot at Augsburg Publishing House. I thought it was probably L. Anderson, but it wasn't L. Anderson. You don't know, L. Anderson runs Augsburg Publishing House. It was this man. He jumped out of the car and he said, I bought a horse. But he said, I must. That's the man. That's the guy. Oh, yeah. All right. As our closing prayer, let's read the last line. Not the three women or the three blind men, but there once was a child. And let that child be Christ. And also let that child be you, born inside a world that boxes you in, and yet born inside a world of a God who breaks open the boxes. Not just once in a while, but every day this rebirth, every day and many times between. We'll say it together. There once was a child in a box. They covered the box up with rocks. They leaned on the door and cemented the floor. God busted the box in the rocks, the rocks, the rocks, the rocks. God busted the box in the rocks. Thank you and good evening.